The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's great to be with you at the start of another work week. It's amazing how fast the weeks go by, but the weekends, those roll by pretty quick as well. Lots to get to on today's program. We've got some follow-up on the segment we did Friday regarding the state of Australia, or the country of Australia, and the various states that have, especially in Victoria, this radical leftist premier that's imposing all of these severe restrictions on the population down there around Melbourne. So we didn't have quite enough time on Friday to finish all that up. If we have time later, we'll touch on that a bit. Also, Vice President Biden was out with Kamala Harris. I forget, maybe NBC interviewed them together over the weekend, or maybe it was Friday, following their convention, which we gave you quite a bit of updates on last week. And of course, this week we've got the Republican convention, so we'll have a few things to say about that as it unfolds. One comment in particular that Mr. Biden made was that if the science determined it, he would quickly shut the economy down. And he said that's one of the problems with the Trump administration, is that everything has reopened too fast. And he's also said recently, as we played last week, that he would be in favor of a three-month mandate on wearing masks. So we've got a clip from him coming up later in the program as well. And as far as his opponent goes, the president of the United States, he gave a lengthy speech on Friday, had quite a few things to say about the Democrat convention, and quite a few other interesting statements as well. I want to begin, though, with an article my father wrote back in January of 2016. Turn down my headphones just a bit. Back in January of 2016, he wrote, "The Roots of America's Dangerous Turn Left." The roots of America's dangerous turn. Now this article, keep in mind, is almost 5 years old. 5 years, 4.5 years. He says here, "Today we see and hear radical left groups chanting, 'You can't stop the revolution.'" They were talking about it. They were chanting about it. They were chanting against the police. Fry them like bacon. Pigs in a blanket. They were calling for revolution. It says here, "Add to that the explosive dynamic of dividing our races," my father writes. "People are preparing themselves for the violent overthrow of the American system." Now think about where we are right now at this moment. And I've talked at length through the course of this year about how that each issue of the trumpet, this is the latest, each issue, as it comes out about 3, 4, 5 weeks ahead of the headlines. But you go back several years and you pick any issue. Here's one, January 2016. Go back and look at it. The roots of this dangerous turn left, where is it taking us? My father wrote, "Notice how viciously they are attacking America's police. The last line of the nation's defense," he says, "after that comes violent chaos and anarchy." So when the last line of defense, that would be local law enforcement, that would be the police. If you remove that line, then what's left? Well, we're beginning to see it, aren't we, in Portland. More disturbing images coming out of Denver this weekend as well. And then, of course, the shooting in Wisconsin. And then the immediate rioting. They don't even wait around to get the facts of the case. They just take to the streets and start burning, smashing, destroying, hurling objects at law enforcement. Total mayhem. And you read about this years ago. You could go back decades to things Mr. Armstrong was writing in The Plain Truth. Here, as my father said in January of 2016, viciously attacking law enforcement. What happens when you remove the last line of defense? Well, all that you're left with is violent chaos and anarchy. Notice what my father said. What will happen when the police are rendered powerless and the military is unprepared? He says, once the police are handicapped and can't do anything, it won't be long before cities burn. Once the police are handicapped, and that's what they are right now. The mob, they're watching what's happening in Portland, and they're gaining momentum, they're gaining strength. It's emboldening them, these images that they see in Portland, or in Seattle, or now Denver, or Chicago. Hey, police shooting, it goes out on social media, and then everyone turns up. In Wisconsin, just the little town of Kenosha, that's a town of about 100,000 people. It's not even a super big city. Well, you heard it. You read about it first at thetrumpet.com. My father said this in 2016, even if the demonstrators don't know anything about communism or the radical left, they are still being stirred up by the radical left. The communists and those who know how to foment unrest. See, you could look at all this and just say, well, these are just crazy young people. They don't know what they're doing, and they probably don't. They probably don't say, well, where's the communist politician that I can vote for? But they're being stirred up by the radical left, by this communist infiltration. They're being used like pawns, these youths. Average age, 28 years of age, taking to the streets, burning and destroying. My father said this is all part of the left's plan to destroy the police. That was in the Trumpet magazine in 2016. The plan is to destroy the police. It says you can't take over the government and run it unless you get rid of the police who are loyal to the system. And so what do we hear? We got to bring down the system. We got to bring down the police. We've got to bring down law enforcement. Here again, the Trumpet magazine. Tomorrow's news today. We got an email from one of our listeners. He says, I discovered your broadcast about 2 years ago and listened to it every day. We're getting more and more emails like this. People who discover the broadcast, the program on YouTube or wherever. He says, I've learned quite a bit about Bible prophecy and how you relate it to our present day, which makes so much sense. I'm looking at the Bible in a different way, and I'm able to put the pieces together as it pertains to what I'm witnessing in our modern day world. He says, finally, although it breaks my heart to see the lawlessness and dismantlement of American society and the destruction of America itself, I can fully understand why this is happening based on Bible prophecy. This is a listener or a viewer that's been with us for 2 years. That's it. Just discovered the broadcast 2 years ago. And it hurts. It hurts to see a nation being destroyed. He's conveying that with his comments here. It breaks my heart to see the lawlessness and dismantlement of American society. But there are answers in Bible prophecy. You can understand why this is happening. He says, finally, I can fully understand why this is happening based on Bible prophecy. Thank you for the wonderful materials your organization has put together. They are very helpful in understanding one's Bible. If you didn't understand these events, well, what hope is there? What hope would there be for our young people? What hope would there be for our children? Look at what they're having to see on the nightly news or on the internet when they get the rundown of today's events. There's another article, even older. This is July of 2015. My father wrote about that prophecy in Isaiah 1 and verse 7. Your cities are burned with fire. He said in that article, accusations of police racism are heightening public mistrust of law enforcement and fueling a trend of violent race-related incidents and lawlessness. He says further on, again, he builds the article around Isaiah 1 and verse 7, and he says further on, few people realize how grave this trend is, as we've been forecasting for over 20 years. 20 years you've been reading about it at the Trumpet. It says race-related violence in our cities is going to play a major role in the unraveling of our society. Think about that statement. He says, for over 20 years, race-related violence in our cities is going to play a major role in the unraveling of our society. A society that's unraveling before our eyes. So over the weekend, you have more rioting, more burning, and just general mayhem. And this time in a relatively small Wisconsin town of Kenosha. Someone captured the incident in question on video. These policemen shooting a black man in the back, getting into his car. He's being held, or was supposedly being held at gunpoint, but he's just walking away from the police, pulling away. All that we know is what we see on a short little video. It's just like that situation in Chicago a couple weeks ago. They hear of a shooting, quote unquote. They don't know any of the details. And they take to the streets and they start destroying. And they do it with boldness. Smashing police cars even. Throwing bricks at police officers. Burning fire trucks. Listen to what this Democrat governor of Wisconsin released in his statement, what he said following the shooting and then the rioting and then the destruction and then the violence. And again, think about what my father said about, even if the demonstrators don't know anything about communism or the radical left, they're still being stirred up by the radical left, by the communists. This is the statement the Democratic governor of Wisconsin said just last night. He says, while we do not have all the details yet, what we know for certain is that he is not the first black man or person to have been shot or injured or mercilessly killed at the hands of individuals in law enforcement in our state or our country. This is the Democrat governor. He immediately comes out and attacks law enforcement. He knows nothing. He even says it in his statement. While we do not have all the details yet, what do we know? Well, we know about the systemic racism. We know about the problems with law enforcement. We know our police hate black people. That's what he's saying. And then he says this, we stand with all those who have and continue to demand justice, equity, and accountability for black lives in our country. And then he lists off all of these black victims as he sees it. And we stand against excessive use of force and immediate escalation when engaging with black Wisconsinites. He says, finally, I have said all along that although we must offer our empathy, equally important is our action. In the coming days, we will demand just that of elected officials in our state who have failed to recognize the racism in our state and our country for far too long. That's yet another Democrat. Just like you heard at the Democrat convention all last week, America has a dark, dark history. America is a racist nation. There was a commentator on CNN, Anderson Cooper, asked her, well, he played a clip for her from Donald Trump, who said that, you know, this whole convention was about saying America's racist. And then it comes back to Anderson Cooper. He says, well, what do you make of those comments? And she said, well, it is racist. So there you have it. You got one party who thinks that the whole country's just racist through and through. And you've got the other party that pretty much disagrees with that. It's not that they whitewash everything in our history. But what a difference. What a stark difference. So the shooting happens. The mob gets busy on social media. And then you see the footage of all these protesters, some with rifles setting up checkpoints. They're going about rioting and looting, surrounding the courthouse, as per usual. They're setting trucks on fire, blocking access to roads, videos all over the internet. That now is in Wisconsin on Friday night, by the way. I think it's the Minneapolis Police Union president, Bob Kroll. He was on one of the Fox evening programs. And listen to his take. You know about the problems, obviously, in Minneapolis. But here is the police union president and what he said on Friday night, clip 8.
The party has declared war on police in all the major cities. Minneapolis has it bad, but thank God we're not Portland or Seattle. You look what's going on out there. I just don't understand it. All these major cities that have Democrats in charge and have had Democrats in charge for decades are the ones that are imploding, and their answer is less police.
The party, he's referring to the Democratic Party, and he says that they've declared war on police. Now, keep in mind what my father said. Two articles I gave him to you. The Roots of America's Dangerous Turn Left, that's January of 2016. And then you have Cities Are Burned with Fire. That's July of 2015. You can get to both those articles at the Trumpet.com website. Or if you are a subscriber to the Trumpet, go back and look at those issues. Here is a party, one of the two major parties in the United States, that has declared war on police. That's why you had that police union come out in New York City for Donald Trump. An endorsement for Donald Trump, something that that commissioner or that chief said that hadn't happened in his 36-year career. They just have kind of stayed out of politics. Now, why would they come out in support of Donald Trump? Well, because the Democrats, as he said there, they have declared war on the police. And if that name sounds familiar, those of you that listen to this program daily, the Minneapolis Police Union president, Bob Kroll, he was in the news just a couple weeks ago. I think actually this might be from a week ago when this Democrat, John Thompson, he's running for a state office in Minnesota, and he led the protesters through the city of Hugo, Minneapolis, or Hugo, Minnesota, I should say. It's just a suburb of Minneapolis. And he's calling for Hugo to be burnt to the ground. He wants the city burned down. This is a Democrat running for a House seat in the state legislature. This is what the Democrat had to say. Just outside of Bob Kroll's house, he went right to the house of this police union president, together with all of the angry mobsters, the protesters. And he was out there saying this, clip 12.
I'm a black man being terrorized by this Klansman right here. We are terrorized by the Grand Wizard. Y'all got the Grand Wizard living in your neighborhood. All the Klan exists in Hugo, Minnesota, and it's right here. Don't run now. Don't run now, racist white people. I'm here.
So there's the Democrat. He's running for office outside of Bob Kroll's house. You just heard a clip from Bob Kroll. Pretty stark difference, I'd say. Calling him the Grand Wizard of the KKK. This is America today. What happens when you take away the last line of defense? And really, besides President Trump, who's coming out in support of law enforcement? These agencies are being abandoned by their city leadership, by the state leadership in some cases. This speech that the president gave on Friday, it was at the Council for National Policy meeting in Virginia. And here's what he said on Friday, clip one.
But the biggest part of last night's speech was what Joe Biden didn't talk about. He didn't talk about law enforcement. He didn't talk about bringing safety to Democrat-run cities that are totally out of control and they have no clue. China was never mentioned in any way, shape, or form. China will own our country if he gets elected. They will own our country. And we're not going to let that happen.
That's the president on Friday. And he's obviously talking about Joe Biden's speech from Thursday night. You know, the one the media just thought was the best he's ever given. The best speech ever. It resembles the one that he gave in 2008, by the way. He's even wearing the same outfit, it looked like. Some pointed this out on the internet. The same kinds of talking points. A lot of the same. Points from the playbook. Just a little bit different. You update it, you revise it. You get up in 2020 and give the same speech. It's all politics, right? But as the president brought out, he didn't say anything about law enforcement. Far from it. If anything, you heard at the convention their support for the protesters who are causing all the violence and the burning. So he doesn't say anything about the destruction of American cities or bringing safety, law and order to American cities. And then, of course, China goes missing as well, and this is a president. Love him or hate him, he's certainly been sounding the alarm about China. And speaking of sounding the alarm, here again, go to the Trumpet. Go to the Trumpet magazine. Where is the China-America clash leading? That's in the most recent issue of the Trumpet, August 2020. Where is it leading? Well, my father says in that one, China has worked ferociously to surpass the U.S. in economic power and scientific advancements. Well, I won't get into all the details, but here again, you can think of the one from a few years ago, China steering the world toward war. And here, a lot of these politicians on the Democratic side, they're sellouts, including the Biden family, selling out to China. And a president comes along and stands up to China, among other things, and he's viciously attacked for doing so. But coming back to what he said about law enforcement and just the explosion of criminal behavior in some of America's biggest cities, here's what the president said Friday, clip two.
So the future of our country and indeed our civilization is at stake on November 3rd. Earlier this summer, murders rose by 29% in New York City, 33% in Philadelphia, 53% in Chicago, 133% in Minneapolis. These are all Democrat-run places. These are Democrat-run, I might say radical left Democrat in some cases, but these are people that don't have any clue what they're doing. They have no idea. I don't even think they know that it's bad what's going on. You know, you'd almost say they're trying to defend it. It's incredible to hear them.
It is incredible. And they are defending it. Here, you know nothing about the details of the case. And immediately, the Wisconsin governor, a Democrat, he comes out and he condemns law enforcement. This was the same knee-jerk reaction that Barack Obama had for so many years of his presidency. As soon as there's an incident, then law enforcement's guilty. Law enforcement's the problem. And so their hands are being cuffed, these policemen. Okay, so there's an incident, and it looks bad for 2 or 3 seconds. Then it'll be dealt with. It goes through the court of law. How many other incidents are these movements just utterly unconcerned about? Because it doesn't fit right within their little narrative. It doesn't give them an excuse to destroy. You remove the last line of defense, and what are you left with? You're left with chaos and anarchy. Speaking of last lines of defense, here's President Trump from Friday, clip six.
I'm the only thing standing between the American dream and total anarchy, madness, and chaos. And that's what it is. I'm representing you. I'm just here. And I'm not sure it's an enviable position, but that's what it is.
He's made comments like this recently where, you know, he's in that final position before it just a total collapse, basically. And he says even there at the end of that clip, I'm not sure it's an enviable position, but that's what it is. I'm here. Now, you think about, again, to put this within the parameters of Bible prophecy, think about 2 Kings 14. And God looking at the misery and the suffering, and there was no one to help. No one to help Israel in this time of radicalism, in this time of chaos. And so God intervened to save America by the hand of Jeroboam. God intervened to save America temporarily. That's the reality. We have to give you the longer term prophetic picture here. My father wrote in 2018, Donald Trump is a man with serious problems, but the radical left is relentlessly waging war against the president and leading this country to its destruction. And it was only Mr. Trump's election that prevented even worse troubles from bringing the nation down even more quickly. That's in the Saving America article, as I say, May of 2018. He said, Donald Trump has proved himself willing to take a stand where others have not. It's quite something to behold him resisting these anti-American forces. He has inspired a few other leaders to challenge the radical left and to help expose it for what it is. And over and again, you hear these speeches. And people, by the way, people ought to sit down and listen to 45, 50 minutes, an hour. Listen to one of his speeches. He's giving them all the time. He's giving interviews with reporters, sometimes 45, 50 minutes. He's the most accessible president in modern American history. He's wide open. If you want to see or understand or hear what he thinks, then listen to a bit of it and stop listening to what others tell you about what he's saying. Well, except for maybe this program. But you look at the radicals in the Democrat media complex, and every reaction, it's so predictable. Every speech, every press conference, and they are just beside themselves. Their heads are exploding. What he said was so ridiculous. It was so over the top. Well, as one UK commentator noted recently, you know, I went and listened to the full-length 45-minute interview to find out what the fuss was all about and come to find out that what he said was actually quite reasonable. It made sense. There was some common sense to it. Now, here's a president saying, look, we want to uphold law and order. We want to reduce crime. And then he says, I'm the only thing standing between the American dream and total anarchy. Look at what's happening on the streets, and, well, you can still hate him if you like, but the reality is what you see, if you have eyes to see. Tim Stanley at the Telegraph this morning, he said, cops are his people, and Trump is their guy. They've got no one else. They've got no one else, he says. In 2016, Trump was the candidate of the unfashionable Americans, particularly the working class, and the growing social gulf between the two parties is stark. This is Tim Stanley, who's really no fan of Donald Trump, but he says, look, if we're just going to have a hysterical reaction to everything he does and says and tweets, we're not going to come to an understanding of why tens of millions of Americans voted for him. We're not going to understand why 60, 70 million, perhaps this go-round, will vote for him. So this is Tim Stanley trying to find out, okay, what's the appeal there? Why does he have such strong support? It says here, the Democrat convention was hosted by actors, rock stars, and comedians. Who has Trump got? A couple famous for defending their property with guns. The widow of a cop murdered during the riots. a schoolboy who was slandered by the media, and a black grandmother who was given life for drug trafficking and who Trump set free. Stanley says the breadth of this coalition is extraordinary, yet the more the media laughs at Trump, the more coherent it feels. Look into it for yourself, he's saying. Don't just accept what CNN or the BBC says about this president. Here's another clip from Friday's speech, clip 13.
But over the last week, the Democrats held the darkest and angriest and gloomiest convention in American history. They spent four straight days attacking America as racist and a horrible country that must be redeemed. Joe Biden grimly declared a season of American darkness.
Now, we're certainly not here as thetrumpet.com or as the Trumpet Daily Radio Show or the Trumpet Magazine to say everything is bright and cheery and positive for the United States. Far from it. Looking at what God has prophesied for our cities, like Isaiah 1:7 says. And we could bring in a number of other prophecies as well. There is hope beyond the violence and the destruction and the anarchy and the chaos that is prophesied. But leaving aside that for a moment, here he's saying about that convention that the message coming out from the Democrats is one of darkness and anger. It's gloomy. Now, take note of that clip you just heard, because as the Republican convention begins this week, that's exactly what the news coverage will say about Donald Trump and the Republicans. Oh, so dark and divisive, gloomy. And so it's two sides pitted against each other. And it's building. It's building. There's the perfect mix. You've got the war against law enforcement. You've got the hatred being between races. You throw in a pandemic on top of that and how that's being politicized. Listen again to what the president said about this unhinged radical left that he's fighting against. Clip 3.
I believe it's one of the worst things going on now is the abolition of police, or even the partial abolition of police. So we have to expose this dangerous left-wing movement. We must defeat it. And with an optimistic vision for America's future, we can be greater than ever before.
That's the president on Friday. And then he went on to say this, clip 4.
But the more success that we've achieved, the more unhinged the radical left has become. Anarchists and violent mobs have rioted in our Democrat-run cities, attacking our police and tearing down statues.
One of the things that Tim Stanley does in his Telegraph piece is he just goes down some of the accomplishments and some of the deals that this president has made. And, of course, the economy that was booming before COVID-19 came along, and a total lockdown was put in place in so many of these deep, dark blue states. He lists off the accomplishments. The lowest unemployment for African Americans in 50 years. He was accomplishing things. It says when Trump takes personal control, things seem to get done. They seem to get done. His greatest achievement, this is Tim Stanley, his greatest achievement in my eyes is that there has been no war. Trump, we were told, was a reckless lunatic. He turned out to be more peaceful than Barack Obama. How about that? How about that? Now, it's not leading to a Garden of Eden utopia and pulling out of the Middle East or letting go of NATO. We know how that factors into Bible prophecy. Those are dangerous trends for sure. But just looking at it on the surface, looking at the here and now, he's not itching to get involved in conflict internationally. And that goes right against what they portray him to be, a reckless lunatic. Stanley says until the coronavirus, he had a better economic record too. So he had a better economic record than Obama and Biden. That's Tim Stanley, as I say. No huge fan of of Donald Trump by any means. One more clip, clip five.
And the radical left spent 4 years trying to illegally overturn the last election. They're still trying to overturn Hillary Clinton. Remember the Hillary Clinton, will you honor the election? Right? The results of the election. There was Hillary Clinton. And she should have asked that question to herself. She's like a crazed lunatic. She's a lunatic. She is something, I'll tell you. But somebody said, what's the difference between Clinton and Biden? Should I say? Should I tell you? Well, Clinton's much smarter, but not a likable person. Joe is not nearly as smart, but he's more likable. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'd rather have the smarter person. Who cares about personality, right? But that's the difference. Very simple, isn't it, huh?
That's him obviously veering away from his teleprompter a bit as he talks about the radical left trying to overturn the results of the election in 2016. And now they're into the hysterical reaction to the United States Post Office and how that he's trying to sabotage the election again. They need to ask the question of themselves. They need to look at themselves. They need to look at the evil and the lawlessness that was pervasive before Donald Trump ever came along. Lindsey Graham, I don't have time to play the clip for you. He was on Fox News over the weekend talking about how the DOJ or the FBI, I forget which, but they informed the Hillary camp back in 2015 that, look, there's a foreign nation trying to meddle in your campaign. And the DOJ, the investigators, they wanted to apply for a FISA and they wanted to be able to investigate this and maybe spy on this foreign agency or this foreign nation, whoever it was. Graham didn't say which nation it was. But he said that they immediately contacted Hillary Clinton to tell her what was going on. They immediately told her. And then they never did get the FISA application through to pursue it any further. The investigation didn't go anywhere, and presumably the Clinton camp took care of the problem, whatever it might have been. His point was that you had the Clinton camp working together with these U.S. agencies. That they're all Americans, right? But with Donald Trump, there was nothing like that. They just started spying. They were lying and spying. Lying to the FISA court, spying on Trump, spying on Carter Page, spying on Papadopoulos, and not telling Donald Trump or his campaign about anything. Two standards of justice. That's what Senator Graham was discussing on over the weekend. Two standards. On the one hand, and this is again, the radical left, its fingerprints was all over this. Well, if it's involving Clinton's camp, of course we need to communicate with her and have open dialogue and try to help her out and make sure that she understands that the DOJ and the FBI, they're here for her. But they didn't view Donald Trump that way. He was the enemy. He is the enemy. He still is. He's standing up to the corruption and the lawlessness. He's exposing them. And the more success he has with his policies, the more he exposes them, the more he fights against them, the angrier they get. And they're working in cahoots with the hoodlums that are taking to the streets. They might not be declaring themselves as communists, but they're certainly being influenced by the radical left. They're certainly being influenced by the communist infiltrators. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send us feedback, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The Correspondence Course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
On Friday, we talked about how that this pandemic and the lockdown associated with it has been totally politicized. You see it all over the world. You see it in Australia. You see it here in the UK. And you still see it in the United States. You still see the Democrat Party trying to get mileage out of this. They want it to be mass. They want a mass mail out of ballots because it's too dangerous, they say. It's too dangerous to go to the polling booth on November 3rd. They're a full 2 months out. They're still saying it's going to be so dangerous. Joe Biden said last week this is the worst pandemic in over 100 years. And of course, he got all of that. He's wrong on like three or four counts. If you look at the Spanish flu in 1918 or the Asian flu in 1957 or the Hong Kong flu in 1968, even the swine flu in 2009, there weren't as many deaths worldwide, but considering there were a lot more young people that died in that, if you just look at the way it's being dealt with today, how come hardly anyone even knows about the swine flu or H1N1? You might have heard of the swine flu, but back then you probably didn't even hear of it. Because Barack Obama and Vice President Biden, well, if they weren't trying to cover it up, they were just botching it entirely. This time around, though, it's a total political exploitation of this pandemic. A war against the flu, basically, a bad flu. And what do we have to do to fight it? Well, mandatory mask wearing, shut down the economy, destroy people's lives, their livelihoods. This was that interview over the weekend where David Muir talked to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Listen to what, this is the reporter asking Joe Biden a question, and listen to his response, clip 11.
Sworn in come January, and we have coronavirus and the flu combining, which many scientists have said is a real possibility. Would you be prepared to shut this country down again?
I would be prepared to do whatever it takes to save lives, because we cannot get the country moving until we control the virus. That is the fundamental flaw of this administration's thinking to begin with. In order to keep the country running and moving and the economy growing and people employed, you have to fix the virus. You have to deal with the virus.
So if the scientists say, shut it down?
I would shut it down. I would listen to the scientists.
15 days to stop the spread. Remember that? That was back in March, the middle of March. 15 days to stop the spread or to save our hospitals or to flatten the curve. We don't want a run on the hospitals, remember? And here he is. If the experts say it, shut it down. Again. I guess it's a third wave. Combine it with the flu. That's a double whammy. Shut it all down. Extend this crisis for as long as possible. How just looking at the two platforms, as I alluded to in the first segment. On the one side, you've got, you know, I'm all that there is for law enforcement, law and order. And the other side that says, well, we don't know all the facts, but we know this. The police are racist. They need to be defunded. And then you add to that this. The one side that wants to reopen the economy, and then the other side that says, yeah, we'll shut it right back down. Mandatory mask wearing. So the choice is going to be clear for the average voter. And what I just want for you to think about for a moment is, what is the average voter thinking in Michigan or Wisconsin or Pennsylvania or Ohio or Minnesota? We've had these clips from a Californian. I think he's in one of the counties in the north of the state. It's a red county that, of course, is surrounded by a lot of blue counties, California being what it is. But his name is Carlos Zapata. He's making a statement in front of the local city council. Okay, he's a business owner. He's seen his business pretty much collapse. He's seen friends suffer because of not the pandemic, but because of the lockdown. He's seen a lot. He's witnessed a lot of suffering. And then he goes into the city council chamber and he's looking at all these council members in a supposedly red county. And they're, of course, wearing their masks and so on. They're in this comfortable air-conditioned facility. They're still getting their paychecks, no doubt, as government workers. And he's just giving them a dose of reality. Here's what it's like for the rest of us. This is clip 16.
Pretty appalled at what's going on. You know, at first we sat as concerned citizens and we all wanted to figure out how to best navigate our way through this whole COVID thing, you know. And as we realized that it's not quite as dangerous as we thought it'd be, you know, I was absolutely appalled at the cowardice, you know. And as you're sitting there with your masks on, I don't blame you for wearing masks, because I'd be hiding my face too if I was you for what you're doing. This is absolutely horrendous what you're doing to these people. I'm a business owner and I'm telling you, our families are starving. You know, you guys can sit here with your jobs, you can sit here and you're going to get paid, you can fall asleep in your chair like that gentleman's doing behind his mask right there, okay? And I'm telling you right now, that right now we're being peaceful. And you better be happy that we're good citizens, that we're peaceful citizens. But it's not going to be peaceful much longer, okay? And this isn't a threat. I'm not a criminal. I've never been a criminal. But I'm telling you that good citizens are going to turn into real concerned and revolutionary citizens real soon. And nobody else is going to say that.
That's what Abraham Lincoln was saying back in the 1830s. There's a lot of violence in the streets, a lot of mob activity. And he said, look, we've got to restore law and order, because if we don't, then those who aren't even criminals are going to start taking matters into their own hands to protect themselves. Or as this American citizen says, to fight for the country, even if it means fighting on our own soil against our brothers, against our families. It's pretty sobering when you think of Isaiah 1 and verse 7. Cities burned with fire. And then you add to that Ezekiel 4 and 5. Civil war. That's what's prophesied. It's happened before. It's just been 150 or 60 years. But it's happened. Americans fighting Americans. And there he is telling his local leaders, how much do you think we can stand? How much longer can we go with this? People, as he said, are suffering. Look at the pain. Forget about the pain of a spreading virus for a moment. Look at the pain, as I said on Friday, that governments around the world are imposing upon their subjects. The pain and the suffering. And here's one lone voice. And as he says in this next clip, look, don't take it as a threat. I'm not a criminal, but there's only so much we can stand. And just so you know, there's a million others just like me. Clip 17.
That we're building, we're organizing, and we'll work with law enforcement or without law enforcement. But you won't stop us when time comes, because our families are starving. And if you don't hear the seriousness of my voice, I hope you open your ears and you absolutely listen to what I'm saying. Because this is a warning for what's coming. It's not going to be peaceful much longer. It's not going to be rah-rah. It's not going to be speeches. It's not going to be gathering outside saying a Pledge of Allegiance. It's not going to be waving flags. It's going to be real. When you've seen the things that I've seen, I went to war for this country. I've seen the ugliest, dirtiest part of humanity. I've been in combat, and I never want to go back again. But I'm telling you what, I will to save this country. If it has to be against our own citizens, it will happen. And there's a million people like me, and you won't stop us. Open the county. Let our citizens do what they need to do. Let owners of businesses do what they need to do to feed their families. Take the masks off. Quit masking and muzzling your children. The psychological damage you're doing to them is horrible. I've had 6 friends kill themselves since it's happened. Veterans who lost their jobs. How do you feel about being complicit in perpetuating that?
The cure is worse than the disease. That's what he's saying. Look, you're making matters worse. And we're getting angry. We're seeing some angry young people on the streets of America. They're angry for different reasons. And there's other people. There's other movements that are getting more and more angry. I saw a comment today underneath some of the footage coming out of Wisconsin, the burning, the violence, the attacking police, and someone underneath saying, it's hard for me not to be angry. It's hard for me not to get angry. So what happens when Satan's the god of this world? When he's stirring up all of this anger, this resentment, this hatred, and then you throw in all of these other factors, racial division, class warfare, a pandemic, a lockdown, it is the perfect storm. How much longer is this going to go on before it's just an absolute and total and complete explosion? How much longer? It's something to think about. Those clips from Sky News Australia last week, I played some from Alan Jones, his show on Sky News, and he was reporting on Australia, or Victoria in particular, about how many people were in hospital because of COVID-19. And listen to what he said. I think this goes back to Wednesday or Thursday of last week, clip 14.
There are 630 Australians in hospital, 620 in Victoria, 10 in the rest of Australia. 52 Australians in intensive care out of 25 million, 45 in Victoria, 7 in the rest of Australia. But from today in New South Wales, Gladys Berejiklian has banned group singing and wind instruments from schools. Nothing to justify it. You can go to a wedding, but you can't shake hands, kiss, sing, dance or stand up. What kind of country have we become? Are we too frightened or too brainwashed to defend our freedoms? Are we satisfied with evasiveness from politicians, with chief health officers running the country, with being given no scientific justification for what we're told to do? Politicians are elected and paid to serve the public, not to wield power without responsibility. Thankfully, sections of the media are at long last waking up. Because up until now, they just broadcast what these so-called health experts have told them. So where are we today? Well, as an excellent editorial said in the Australian newspaper, we now face disturbing trends that go to the heart of our system of government. Our Constitution sets out key provisions of how the nation is to function. So if the Constitution is irrelevant, if all our freedoms can be just stolen from us and borders can be locked down in total defiance of Section 92... when was the Constitution ripped up, and on whose authority?
That's right. Who ripped up the Constitution? Where did these new rules and regulations come from? Did the people have a say? Is it a democracy or in Australia or the United States? Or is it the rule of tyrants? A pandemic that gave way to martial law. Or tyranny. And then you have people very angry about what's happening, about what they can and cannot do, about what the government is doing. He says the Constitution's basically been shredded, and we're being led then by alarmist politicians, scaremongers. You look at the number of people dying in Australia every day, 440. He gave you the main center of the outbreak in this so-called second wave is in Victoria, and there's virtually nothing in the rest of the nation. And yet you've got some of these other states that have just imposed these crazy regulations. And even what they've done to try to do that in Victoria, it's been a total botch, and that's been covered on Sky News Australia. Human government, as I said on Friday's program. These are human beings who think, really, who think they're God. It's that loftiness, that haughtiness, the lofty looks of man, as Isaiah 2 brings out. That's what has to be humbled. God's trying to get our attention on all sides, you see. God's trying to get our attention. He says, as he says at the end of Isaiah 2, cease from man. Stop looking to man and look to me. Looking to man, that's what got us to this point. That's the cause, this loftiness, this haughtiness, that's the cause of the leadership crisis that's prophesied in Isaiah 3. And Isaiah 2, as I said Friday, gives you some important context so that you can understand why there's a crisis or a dearth in true leadership today. We've got a booklet, Character in Crisis, and many other things on top of that, but that would be a good one to start with if you're concerned about the crisis in leadership. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.